Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakara Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Matalika Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguyaga Sri Jiva Gopalaka Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguyaga Sri Jiva Gopalaka. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, for very expert and scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they're honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of, because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Sri Shat Goswami Prabhu Ki. So our course is on the southern side of the ocean of nectar of devotion. On Friday, we began with a little introduction, or part of an introduction, really. This part of Nectar of Devotion is discussing Bhava Bhakti, the different elements of rasa, or the different types of bhavas, the different types of ecstasies, and their interrelationships. But before we really go into the details of that, because of course it is a very elevated subject, and I think it is something which many of us will not be familiar with, perhaps even at all in some cases. So before we really get into the details of the subject matter, which are discussed in the second part of Nectar of Devotion from chapter 20 to chapter 34, then we're just sort of touching on some of the main points in the first part, the eastern side of the ocean, from the beginning through chapter 19. So we made the point in regard to, you could say, the relationship between sadhana bhakti and bhava bhakti, because the great majority of that eastern side, that first part of Nectar of Devotion, the greater part is dealing with sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti mainly, and to some extent Raghunuga sadhana bhakti, with just very brief introductory glimpses into bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. So we're just going back over some of the points, just to give us some kind of sense of perspective. Otherwise, we're coming at a great height, very great height, actually. We're coming in well over our own heads, I think, in terms of practical realization or spiritual realization. So to give a sense of perspective from where we are and what the elevated nature of this subject matter of Bhava Bhakti is like, so we're just having a look back through, a little bit through, sadhana bhakti. We did make the point that from the point, or should I say after Anathanivritti, but before Bhava, then, of course, there are, there's so many wonderful things, actually. Nishta is very nice. Ruchi is very amazing. And Asakti is very, very special indeed. But they're all part of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means the practice of devotional service, not the perfection. So the devotee who is, even on these levels, nishta and ruchi and asakti, is still imperfect, actually. So, however, even though the devotee is still imperfect, somehow between nishta and asakti, one becomes aware of what one's eternal relationship is with Krishna. So, until finally on the level of asakti, then on the level of asakti, the devotee is quite conscious of what his or her eternal relationship is with Krishna, although they may not have really entered it, but as far as having a perception of it, that is there. And we read a statement of Srila Prabhupada's from Narada Bhakti Sutra. Prabhupada says, I'll just read the main part. At the stage called asakti, or attachment, a person can understand his relationship with the Supreme Lord. When he understands his position, he begins reciprocating with the Lord. By constant reciprocation with the Lord, the devotee is elevated to the highest stage of love of Godhead, prema. By Krishna's grace, I came across another very interesting statement by Srila Prabhupada today. It's actually in a purport in Madhyalila chapter 23. If you're familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita, you would know that chapter 23 of the Madhyalila is where Lord Chaitanya discusses bhava and prema. Having in chapter 22 gone through all the preliminary stages, basically, up to that point, then 23 is first of all focusing on bhava. So in one of the purports there, Srila Prabhupada says, first of all, he quotes those, or rather, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quotes Rupa Goswami's verses, Ado Shraddha, Tata Sadhu, Sangota, Bhajana Kriya, all the stages from Shraddha to Prema. And then Srila Prabhupada gives fairly substantial purport in which he briefly talks about each of these levels. So I won't read the whole thing. I'll just read a few sentences. So Prabhupada first of all mentions a bit about Shraddha, then Sadhu Sangha, and then Bhajana Kriya. After initiation, when one follows the regulative principles of devotional service, one becomes freed from all unwanted things, anatha nivritti. In this way, one becomes firmly fixed, nishta, and gradually develops a taste for devotional service. That's ruchi. The more the taste grows, the more one desires to render service to the Lord. In this way, one becomes attached. That's asakti. To a particular mellow in the Lord's service. Shanta, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, or madhura. As a result of such attachment, bhava develops. So, that is Madhyalila chapter 23, I think it's verse 15. It's around about there. 15:15. Yeah, it's around about there. So this is just confirming this point that at least some clear perception of one's eternal relationship with the Lord, it is there while in sadhana bhakti, at least on the very higher levels, but before perfection, before bhava. So, yes. So now, we were then talking about, we were talking about this point, and Vaidhi sadhana bhakti is one type of approach, Raghunuga sadhana bhakti is another type of approach to coming to the point of perfection or the beginnings of perfection, which is bhava, and how there will be a gradual development within the devotee. Whichever path the devotee is on, which, as we mentioned, it's not just a matter of making some choice that I think I'll stick with Vaidhi, whereas someone else thinks, well, let me just have a go for Raghunuga. It's not some sort of whimsical thing like that. This is very deep. And it is connected with one's eternal relationship. One's eternal relationship is unfolding, stage by stage, step by step. So, I thought that I could read a few verses from one book by one of our acharyas, in which the acharya is expressing himself how he is actually experiencing this himself. Again, it's just for a sense of perspective. As a little introduction, I'll read a few sentences from a book by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu. I don't know if you're familiar with this book at all. It's like a very brief commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He just briefly analyzes the main points. So, he here is talking about Rupa Goswami. Though Sri Rupa Goswami is an eternally liberated associate of Sri Gaurasundara and is continually engaged in the service of Sri Krishna as Sri Rupa Manjari, still in his external physical body, he considers himself to be a sadhaka, a practicing devotee, someone performing sadhana bhakti, and plaintively prays to be able to attain some service at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Thus it sometimes comes to pass that while in this consciousness, he becomes internally aware of his identity as Sri Rupa Manjari, and thus tastes service to Sri Krishna directly. Maybe we should close the door. Let's try it. I hope it's not going to become too hot. Let's try it. Oh, yeah, maybe you can open the windows. This was an unscheduled program out there. So now, Rupa Goswami, of course, is not a sadhaka. Sadhaka means one who is performing sadhana bhakti or practicing or learning devotional service, an imperfect devotee trying to become perfect. We all know that very clearly. He is completely perfect in all respects, but sometimes he and the other Goswamis would in their writings, express the moods of sadhakas. So what I'm going to read is some verses by Raghunath Das Goswami, in which he is expressing exactly that mood, that he is Raghunath Das Goswami, a man or a living entity in a male body who is executing sadhana bhakti, and now he's come to an advanced level of sadhana bhakti. There's some perception of his eternal relationship, and naturally, because that is such a wonderful and such an amazing thing, and is actually the deepest part of his own real eternal nature. So naturally, there's a very powerful attraction to that. Although he isn't there yet. He's not there yet. At least this is how he's expressing himself. He is there, actually. But he's expressing himself as if he's not there, but he can see where he's going. He's becoming a manjari, and he is more and more and more wanting to achieve that. And so is praying and hankering and meditating and desiring and so on and so forth. So we'll read these verses and we'll see that Raghunath Das Goswami expresses himself from, I would say, three perspectives, I think, something like that. One is a sadhaka who is referring to certain persons, certain sort of parameters in his regular sadhana bhakti, like his chanting and his regulative principles in that sense. Then there are other verses in which he expresses himself as a man, but a man who is appealing for the shelter of Radharani, not just in the sort of, you know, the way we may, as we go around Vrajmandal, bumping into the locals and say, Radhe, things like that. But really appealing, but as a man, appealing to Srimati Radharani for her mercy. And then thirdly, as a manjari. But a manjari who is somewhat separated, not yet properly or completely situated as a manjari, but really hankering for that. So, now this is all very elevated. This is very, very elevated. But just try and listen to it carefully and just see the different moods that Raghunath Das Goswami is going through, the different transitions in his consciousness, and just try and appreciate a little what the ramifications of this are. Yeah. So you'll see he goes from one mood to another, then back and forth like that. So you just have to listen carefully and try and see where he is right now and where he's going, where his consciousness is going. So he says, let me surrender to my spiritual master, Yadunandan Acharya, a powerful and dear devotee of the Supreme Lord Yadunandan. He sprinkled the nectar of his mercy on me. I worship Lord Chaitanya Chandra, the supremely independent ocean of great mercy, who with his ropes of mercy quickly lifted me from the endlessly troublesome great dry well of household life, from which escape is very difficult, who gave me the shelter of his lotus feet, which rebuke the lotuses, and who gave me to Swarup Damodar Goswami. I was unwilling to drink the nectar of devotional service, possessed of renunciation. But Sanatan Goswami, out of his causeless mercy, made me drink, even though I was otherwise unable to do so. Therefore, he's an ocean of mercy. He's very much compassionate on fallen souls like me. And thus it's my duty to offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. O Queen, a certain maidservant, overwhelmed with love, and her heart burning in the great fire of separation, laments in the following verses. O Queen, please rescue this unfortunate person, drowning in an ocean of pain. Place him on the strong boat of your mercy and carry him to the wonderful realm of your lotus feet. O Queen, with the medicine of the red lac from your lotus feet, please bring back to life this person now dead from the bites of the black snake of not seeing you. O Queen, with the nectar of a moment's glance, please restore the life of this gopi maidservant of your lotus feet, who now burns in the great forest fire of separation from you. O beautiful faced one, when, even in a dream, will I, by decorating my head with the splendid perfumed powder of your lotus feet, attain the goal of my life? O beautiful one, when will the sound of your ankle bells, sprinkling drops from an ocean of nectar, cure my deafness? O Queen of Vrindavan, since Rupa Manjari filled my eyes with light in the land of Raja, I've yearned to see the red lac decorating your lotus feet. O Queen, whose eyes are as beautiful as two blossoming lotus flowers, when your lake, filled with sweet water and splendid with many blossoming lotus flowers and buzzing bees, appeared before my eyes, I at once began to yearn for the nectar of direct service to you. O Queen, I shall never ask you for anything other than direct service to your lotus feet. I offer my respectful obeisances to your friendship. I offer my respectful obeisances to your friendship again and again. May I find your service as sweet as nectar. May I find your service as sweet as nectar. So these are just a few verses. There are many, many, more than 100. And there, if you listen carefully, then you would have seen quite easily how Raghunath Das Goswami was beginning in the mood, you could say, of a regular sadhaka, something like that. At least someone engaged in the regulative service, regulated service of the spiritual master, engaged in such vaidhi activities as renunciation. But then suddenly a switch into the mood of the gopi maidservant, the manjari. Then a switch back, that now he's a man again, appealing to Radharani, and then back and forth like that. So did you find those verses interesting? Okay. See, I don't want to go, you know, like too deeply into certain things, because, you know, it may just be too much for some people and we may not be able to relate to it so much. But, you know, if you find it nice and, you know, like educational, revealing, then there are many verses, many poems, in which many things are described. So now, the idea there was just to convey this idea, a little perspective, what happens in the course of sadhana bhakti, the higher levels of sadhana bhakti, before coming to bhava, which is mainly what we're going to be discussing in our course. So that is, this of course is Raghunuga sadhana bhakti. Now our course is not really to go into all the details of that or what is Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, but we mentioned the other day about rag, that intense attachment which is mainly held by the inhabitants of Vrindavan for Krishna, to the point that they become oblivious to anything other than their relationship. Even other relationships they may become oblivious to. What to speak of the fact that Krishna's God? Oh, they become totally oblivious to that. It's just a matter of their loving relationship. And like I said, even they become oblivious to other relationships, like the cowherd boys, when Krishna goes off to meet the gopis and leaves them alone in the cowherding fields. The cowherd boys, not all of them, but many of them, they look at each other and in a sort of transcendently disappointed way, say, why is he going off to meet those girls? What's wrong with him? How can you have fun with girls? You know, you can't play with girls. You can't wrestle with girls. What's the point? They're so absorbed in their relationship that even other relationships, they're just fixed in their relationship with that rag. So rag anuga means, just like we are Prabhupada anugas, we're following Prabhupada. So rag anuga means following people who have rag. So Raghunath Das Goswami was expressing that type of mood, that he's not perfect, but he knows he's a gopi maidservant. He knows he's a manjari. And, I mean, there are many other verses we could have read also, how he is praying to be able to do that type of service, the type of service that a manjari does. He prays, When will the day come when I will be able? He says, O Queen, when with great love and happiness will I daily rinse the drains of your house with pure water, dry them with my own hair, and then scent your garden pavilion with an abundance of sweetly fragrant incense? So he's hankering for that. And who's he hankering under? I mean, who is he anuga? Who is he following? He said it quite plainly. No, not Swarup Damodar. Rupa Manjari. That day, that Rupa Manjari opened my eyes. Since Rupa Manjari filled my eyes with light in the land of Raja, I've yearned to see the red lac decorating your lotus feet. Anyway, like I said, our goal here is not to analyze in detail, you know, the intricacies of Raghunuga sadhana bhakti or any type of sadhana bhakti, really, but just to give us a little perspective that through sadhana bhakti, a person comes to the point of perfection. And in the higher stages of sadhana bhakti, that coming to perfection, which one is practicing and learning and trying to become qualified for, that will naturally, and it must naturally, involve learning one's eternal relationship. It's like the final lesson, you could say. how to actually relate with Krishna, actually, face to face. And when one becomes finally mature and one's practice becomes perfect, one comes to the level of bhava. And that is the subject matter of our course. So first of all, let us give a definition of bhava. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 23, it's verse 7. This is Lord Chaitanya instructing Sanatan Goswami, and the same verse is in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It is the definition of bhava there. Madhya 23:7. Shuddha sattva visheshatma prema suryangshu samya bhak ruchibis chitta masrin ya krid asau bhava uchite. When devotional service is executed on the transcendental platform of pure goodness, it is like a sun ray of love for Krishna. At such a time, devotional service causes the heart to be softened by various tastes, and one is then situated in bhava, which Prabhupada translates here as emotion. So now, there are three characteristics, and these are pointed out by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu. There are three specific characteristics of bhava. The first one and main one is called the Swarup Lakshana, which means the constitutional or main fundamental characteristic. So, that is Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma. It is the stage where Shuddha Sattva enters the heart. Shuddha Sattva means the internal potency of Krishna. Up until that point, of course, as we are practicing, we have some contact with the internal potency, of course. We chant Hare Krishna, if there's a big kirtan, we become very ecstatic. So that is not material. It is not material. It is spiritual. But there is a great difference in scale. There is an important difference between that and this. The actual internal potency of the Lord enters the heart. When that enters the heart, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, even one grain of that eliminates ignorance completely. Yes. Just a touch of that. Even a chandala, if he has a touch of that, becomes worshipable by Lord Brahma and other great personalities. So it is the internal spiritual potency of the Lord. In other words, the devotee is situated actually on the transcendental platform in all respects. And no matter what the material energy may do, but there'll be no movement on the part of the devotee. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, interestingly enough, makes the point that even on the level of a sakti, sometimes the material energy may overpower the mind of the devotee. Is rather, how, you know, on these higher levels of sadhana bhakti, it's all working, you know, it's very transcendental. But he definitely makes the point that sometimes the material energy can overpower the mind of the devotee. But as soon as the devotee notices, oh, Maya is attacking me, then just by noticing it and saying, oh no, I don't want that, then it's gone. But still, sometimes it may happen. But on the level of bhava, the devotee is completely transcendental. Under Shuddha Sattva, then the two secondary characteristics are, one, it softens the heart. The heart is, if one is not on the level of bhava, there's a famous verse in the second canto somewhere, that if, when you chant Hare Krishna, tears do not come to your eyes, and your hairs do not stand on end, then your heart is steel-framed. So, however, on the level of bhava, the heart begins to melt sometimes. If you're familiar with the 17th chapter, with the eastern side of the ocean, you'll know that Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada, they give the example of Maharaj Ambarish. He was on the level of bhava, at least where he's described, when he was described in the 9th canto. Devasamuni came, and I think you would be familiar with that pastime. Devasamuni was going to kill him by invoking some mystical demon who came lunging at Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish saw, here comes this demon. And, yeah, you could open the door now, maybe. He saw this demon. And what did he do? He immediately took shelter of Krishna. He closed his eyes, fixed his mind in his heart on Krishna. And what happened? Tears came to his eyes. Yes. Tears coming to the eyes. This is a particular form or type of bhava, a very important manifestation of bhava. Yes. So, when the demon went away, then he became pacified. No more tears coming from the eyes. So in other words, the devotee on the level of bhava, the heart is softened somewhat, sometimes. Of course, our goal here is not really to discuss prema, but the difference on the level of prema is that the heart becomes totally soft. In fact, it melts and becomes liquid. And you know, with liquid, if there's even the slightest influence, then immediately there's some agitation there in the liquid. So like butter, if you heat butter, then it'll soften and sort of, you know, change its shape a bit eventually. But when something is liquid, then you just apply, you just touch it like that, and there'll be some ripples. So on the level of prema, the devotee's heart is like liquid and is just constantly moving under the influence of these different bhavas. So that's the second characteristic, that the heart becomes softened. And the third is that various tastes start to arise in the heart. Specifically three. The desire to achieve Krishna. The desire to please Krishna. And the desire to be close at heart with Krishna. Certain symptoms begin to manifest. The first symptoms of a person on the level of bhava, we have written on the board here. There are nine symptoms. First symptoms of the beginning of bhava, or at least that bhava has begun. The microphone is switched off. Anyway, can you hear? Can you hear? Ah, okay. Thank you. Okay. So now, we are at the beginning of Bhava here. So, now, let's see. There are these nine first symptoms. There is a verse, Majjalila chapter 23, two verses, 18 and 19. They are the verses which appear, Prabhupada has translated them, right at the beginning of chapter 18 of the Nectar of Devotion, and they list these qualities. Shantir avyarta kala tvam viraktam mana sunyata asha banda samutkanta namagane sadaruchi asaktistad gunakyane pritistad vasatistale ityadayo nubhava syur jata bhav anukure jane. So then it lists out these nine. And Lord Chaitanya says, these are called anubhava. Now, we have written, and in fact, we haven't started in our overview book, have we? Because we're just trying to give the perspective. But you'll see, in the overview book, the second wave, the second type of bhava is called anubhava. We're not going to go into the details now of what it is as distinct from the others, but these particular qualities, Lord Chaitanya says, these are called anubhava. They're subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. In other words, when a person is on the level of bhava, they will naturally manifest these symptoms. They may not sound so exciting. Some of them might not. Not exciting like rolling on the floor, hairs standing on end, and many others, which we will inform you of as we go on, which are very interesting. I mean, they are very extraordinary, to say the least. These don't sound so exciting. That you don't waste your time. That doesn't sound very emotional. Often we think of bhava, emotion. And actually a lot of it is emotion. Or manifests externally as emotion. But these are the first signs of bhava. Not the first, and then they go and are replaced by others. They're the first, and they're always there anyway. But they'll always be the first symptoms to be visible. And they're given, Rupa Goswami gives them in the 18th chapter. That little introduction. What is bhava? Well, you can recognize such a person who's on that level if they have these nine symptoms. Doesn't waste time, always perseverant, detached. Very humble, very hopeful, very eager to serve, likes chanting, likes to describe the glories of the Lord, and likes living in a place where the Lord is living, like Vrindavan, like in a temple, or maybe will make their own home like a temple. Now, where I was hoping today we could go through these in a little detail before we launch into the 20th chapter. But I think we're going to have to wait till tomorrow, which is no problem. But there's a very interesting comment that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu about these qualities. He lists them out and says, these symptoms appear in those devotees in whom the bud of bhava has begun to blossom. If these small sprouts of the creeper of loving devotion are observable, then it is to be understood that that devotee, just listen to this, then it is to be understood that that devotee has attained the qualification to be able to meet Sri Krishna face to face. It's very interesting. It's very amazing. Very amazing. Maybe I could ask any comments or questions so far. Yeah. Then there are two which... that one experiences various tastes. And there are three tastes. They're actually desires. The desire to achieve Krishna, the desire to please Krishna. When we say achieve Krishna, please Krishna, we mean in very direct and very personal ways. I mean, we would like to achieve Krishna. We would like to please Krishna, generally, hopefully. But this is on a much deeper level. And then the third is the desire to be close at heart with Krishna. In other words, hankering and taste, attachment for very intimate relationship and connection with Krishna, which is still developing. Any other comment or question? Yes? At what stage does one realize one's swarup? One will have already realized, I mean, understood at least, because these are symptoms of bhava. A person who has these nine characteristics in very nice ways, which we'll talk about tomorrow, they must be understood to be already on the level of bhava, the perfect level, so they already know what their eternal relationship is with Krishna. But one, Prabhupada, we read that quote today and the other day. Prabhupada said on the level of a sakti, a devotee knows what his relationship is with Krishna. And we read also, Prabhupada said there in the Madhya Lila, that the devotee becomes aware of his relationship with Krishna, Shantadasya, Sakya Vatsalya or Madhurya, and then comes to the level of bhava. So it is before that. It is while learning, while still in sadhana bhakti, that one at least becomes aware. Yes. And then we said the higher levels of practice are to practice the relationship. Not just to practice getting up in the morning and, you know, not conking out again, not that sort of practice, but practice the actual relationship. Yeah. So that is somewhere, ruchi, asakti, these levels, that the eternal relationship becomes apparent. Couldn't these nine qualities of bhava apply to someone on the level of nishtha? Yes, but not to the degree which is required in these cases. We'll go through the cases and we'll see that the degree of wasting of time, I'm not wasting time, for example, is just beyond someone on the level of nishtha. The degree of hope that I want to make it even though I'm not qualified, the degree of hope, it's quite different. It's much higher. But it's a fact that these things will be there on the level of nishtha. They will be there, but to much lesser degrees. Yeah. Any other comment or question? So, question is that We understand Maharaj Bharat from the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam was on the level of Bhava, but he fell down. But we have presented things in such a way that it might give the impression that someone on the level of Bhava couldn't fall down. Well, it's not actually that someone on the level of Bhava can't fall down. We must say, though, it is extremely unlikely. You know, I mean, I don't know if you could give a percentage. It would be so small. The likelihood would be so small as compared to, say, devotees on the level of Anatha Nivritti, which I think many of us here are somewhere around. Yeah, there you'll get quite, you know, a certain rate of attrition or spiritual mortality rate or whatever. But on the level of Bhava, it is extremely unlikely. However, the point is made, it's an interesting point, why is a devotee on the level of Bhava not on the level of Prema? Why not? If they're already basically perfect in that category, that general category, why are they not on the level of Prema? That is because there are still some traces of some things left. Yeah. There's still some traces. But generally, they have very little effect. The only effect they have is interrupt the ecstasy. Yeah. They interrupt the ecstasy. Whereas on the level of Prema, they're totally gone. The ecstasy is uninterrupted. All right, so we will then tomorrow go on to discuss these like preliminary or fundamental characteristics of a person on the level of Bhava and try and convey, you know, a little bit of the degree of these things which are required if a person is to really be considered to be on the level of Bhava. And we will, I'm pretty sure, we will start reading chapter 20. So please, if you haven't done, please read chapter 20. Read it side by side with the overview book, because, you know, it'll, I think, give a little insight. Because the subject matter is probably new to many of you, it'll just help you to see how it all fits together. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.